Good morning. We are at the bottom of Sunny Dalit Amud Beis, 94B. And I understand Yaakov may have done the Mishnah yesterday, but
no,
didn't do the Mishnah yesterday. Excellent. All right, so we're up to the Mishnah. Okay, the Mishnah actually asked a very important question here. It's only implicit in the Mishnah, but it's a critical question about this mitzvah of Rika and Shtifa, and by extension, not just Rika and Shtifa, but all the things that we do with the Kalim that are involved with the Damchatas. Let's take a look at the Mishnah, and we'll see if we can figure out what the question is. Beged Shayatza Chutz L'Klayim. First of all, if you have Big Day Kahuna, which or any Begadim really, which get the Damchatas onto them, and then they leave the Beis Hamikdash. Yatzah Chutz L'Klayim, we use the term from Mishkan, but the idea is they left the Azara. Nichnas, so you go back in with it, umechab sobe makom kadosh, and you wash it in the Azara, because that's where the washing is supposed to take place. Nitma Chutz L'Klayim, what if it left the Azara with the beged on it, with the dam on it, excuse me, and then it became tame outside, so I can't bring something tame into the Azara. So koro, you tear it, nichnas, you go back in, umechab sobe makom kadosh, and you wash it there in the Azara. That's the first part. Second part. Klicheres sheyatza chutz l'klayim. Let's have a klicheres. We know the rule. You cooked the chatas in this pottery thing, so it's supposed to be broken. So what if it left the Azara? It was supposed to be broken in the Azara. Nichnas, you bring it back in. V'shogro makum kadosh, and you break it again in the Azara. Nitma chutz l'klayim, what if it became tame outside? No kvo, so you puncture it. V'nichnas, you go back in. V'shogro makum kadosh, and you break it in the Azara. And then the third part, klina choshes, sheyatza chutz l'klayim. The klina choshes is supposed to have this riko shtifa process. So what if it left the Azara? Nichnas, you go back in with it. Umorko b'shotvo makum kadosh, and you take care of it in the Azara. Nitma chutz l'klam, if it became tame outside of the Azara. So pochso. Pochso, we understand to mean, as Rashi says, b'nekev gadol, you make a big hole in it. The nichnas, you then go back in. Umorko b'shotvo makum kadosh, and then you do your mriko shtifa. You wash it out with cold water, as we'll see in the Gemara, the makom kadosh in the Azara. So what we've done is gone through a three-stage process as far as what I do for each of these. If the kli, the beged, whatever it was, left the Beis HaMikdash, number one. And number two, what if it left the Beis HaMikdash and it became Tameh? But implicit within this, and I think the reason why we need to go through all three of them, and we can't just say it for one of them and assume everybody will understand it's for all three, is that we're addressing the question of what sort of obligation this is, what sort of mitzvah this is of cleaning them out.
It's a mitzvah to say, otherwise you just say forget about it and throw it out.
Exactly. In other words, is this, especially when you're dealing with Rika and Shtifa on the last one, when you're dealing with the copper kli, you know, is this, if you want to use this again, and then I guess this is the process you have to do, like normal kashering, right? If I have a kli and it absorbs meat and milk by accident, so I have no mitzvah of kashering the kli. If you want to use the kli again, so then kasher it. Do I look at this the same way? Or do I say, no, there's actually an obligation of, get rid of the damchatas that got on the baguette, get rid of that which was absorbed within these kalim. And the answer is clearly the latter, because we're saying, go to the trouble of making it tahor and bringing it back into the Azara in order to be able to do this. It's a remarkable thing. I brought you a table here which lists the first three of the categories. You have the baguette, you have the klicheres, and you have the klina choshes. And then we're going to see the discussion about the me'il in particular later on. But that's important to know, that this mitzvah is actually a mitzvah you must get up and do. It isn't just, if you do this, you have fulfilled a mitzvah, but it's actually, and it's not a koshering process either, it's actually a hard and fast obligation, such that I have to find a way to get that back into the Beis HaMikdash, and that's going to factor very importantly in the next discussion. Four lines up from the bottom, Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis. Maskif La Ravina. Ravina asks a question. He says, Koro, you're telling me that you're supposed to tear this thing. Beged Amar Achmanav, Allah Beged, once you tear it, it's no longer a beged. The Torah said, not only is this actually a chiyuv for me, is it an obligation for me to wash out the damchatas, not just something I can choose to do, but what's something I must do, but number two, I have to do it with the item still called a beged. It's no longer a beged, it's no longer a garment if you tear it up. That's the whole point of tearing it to remove its tumah. So he answers, "Demishayer bay kedei ma'afores." No, you leave it intact to a certain extent. If you take a look at Rashi, "Demishayer bay shelo yavdil es hakera al pnei kulo lachlo kesabeget lishnayim." You don't tear it all the way through, such that it's now two separate garments. "El mishayer bo kedei rochav sudor." You leave in it the width of a sudor. A sudor we usually render as some kind of a scarf or an apron. "Demitumaso tahor hol v'nikra rubo." On the one hand, the tahor is lost. The tuma is lost because it's now torn through, at least in the majority. The kevach shir bokadei ma'afores. But since you left the smock's worth intact, roy lechabro, you could still connect it back together again. Ushmo alav, it's still identified as the garment it was. Ubeged karinam bay, we call it a beged as far as satisfying the obligation. That's the idea. The mishayer bay kedei ma'afores.
Isn't this issue that if you tore it, then it wouldn't be a beged? So then there's no purpose.
Yes.
In trying to take the dumb out.
Correct.
Because not a beged anymore.
Well, no. Sorry. His point is not that then there's no point in removing it. His point is you can't fulfill the mitzvah. His point is that you can't fulfill the mitzvah anymore. That's what I was emphasizing by saying in the Mishnah. Those sheets are old. That's what I was emphasizing by saying in the Mishnah that this is actually an obligation for me.
Right.
The reason why you don't lose the obligation to take out the dam is because the law of the dam being in it is not a tumah law.
Right.
It's a law in kutchin.
You catch 22, you tear it, then it's not a beggar, then you can't fulfill it.
Then you can't fulfill the mitzvah, correct. So the Gemara asks, Ini, is that really true? Va'amar Rav Huna, lo shanu ela shelo shir bakadei ma'afares, aval shir bakadei ma'afares, chibur avi. But didn't Rav Huna say that the only way in which it will lose its tumah, and lose its status as a beggar along the way, but the only way it will lose its tumah in that discussion, is if you don't leave kedei ma'aforis, if you don't leave the smock's worth, if you leave the smock's worth, then chibur havi. Now, once again, it is still called a beged, and it's still tummy, and therefore you can't reintroduce it. So the Gemara answers, Tabatzadi Hamad Aleph, midirabbanan hu. That type of tumah is really a dirabbanan. If you see the top Rashi on Tzadi Hamad Aleph, Gezera dimalo asya lemikra ruba. Why did the Rabbanan create such a tumah? In general, we avoid creating tumah dirabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash, that's for sure. But the reason why is because you might have a situation otherwise in which the person doesn't tear the majority of the beged. And therefore it will remain tamei on a biblical level. According to the Del Raisa, it's Tahor. Del Raisa, it's Tahor, the Rabbanan is Tamei. Correct. Alami Del Raisa Tahor, as Rashi says. Umudu Lachnisa Mishu Mitzvah's Kibbos, and the Mitzvah of Kibbos will override the concerns for the Tumah de Rabbanan. The Dam Zvachan points out the question. He says, why didn't you just dip the thing in the mikvah? When you're tearing it in order to reintroduce it to the Beis HaMikdash, why don't you just bring it to mikvah and you're done? Assuming it had Tumah Sheretz, so he gives you two answers. It's very interesting. He asks the same question regarding puncturing kelim that we mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah Melech asks this question and says it's because it would water down the dam, but that doesn't work regarding puncturing kelim. Puncturing a kli, he says that doesn't work. So the Mishnah Melech points out from the Ramban, which is not found, it's found in the Note of Yehuda. The Yehuda quotes the Ramban that in fact the law is that kibbutz as well as mrika and shtifa have to be done that day. They have to be done the same day. That they actually absorb the dam, or that they have the chadas cooked in them, and therefore you can't tovel it and wait for Harav Shemesh, right? Tevila, dipping it in the mikvah won't help you. You have to wait for sunset. You wait for sunset, you've lost your opportunity to do Rika and Shtifa. It's a very interesting point that he makes. Okay. Yeah. No, they're not mevatel achiyuv. They tell me I am supposed to do this. I do bring it back in. I do. That's correct. It doesn't have to be tummy. This is a very important thing. Let me review this from the Mishnah, because this is a critical point. What we're saying is that washing out the dam or doing rika and shtifa is not a law in tumah. It's a separate mitzvah of do this process with that which had the dam on it or which absorbs the chatas. It has nothing to do with tumah. Removing the tumah does not at all take care of this obligation for me. Removing its status as a beged, removing its status as a kli, does not take care of this obligation for me. It only eliminates my opportunity to do it. So what the Rabbanan have done by declaring tumah for this beged is irrelevant, doesn't do anything to us, because I have a mitzvah, I say, del raisa, of go clean this thing out. That's the idea. And the fact that they call this thing tameh doesn't prevent me from reintroducing it to the Beis HaMikdash in order to clean it. That's the idea. What we're saying is midi oraisa, this is tahor. Therefore, midi oraisa, I can bring it back into the Beis HaMikdash and do this. And the fact that the Rabbanan say, wait, it's still tameh, doesn't stop me from doing so. And I still have my chiyuv 100% to do it because it's called a beged. On the everybody will agree that it's that's identified as a beged.
Can I just back up to the Mishnah? Why is a chatas blood considered tumor on a beged?
That's a d'oraisa. If you see if you have a sheet around from the other day, I actually brought the pasuk on Friday's sheet. The yeah, thank you. If you see, it's not tame, is not quite the word. It's got the kedusha is the word that the Torah uses, although in the Orla sense of kedusha, you see hakohenam chateos echlenam bakum kedusha techab chatzav moed kol asher yigad b'vsara yikdash v'asher yizemi demala beged asher yizelat chabes makom kedosh. It's a mitzvah from the Torah that I have to wash out the garment on which the dam lands. It's not just big day kahuna, by the way. It's by the godim in general. Six eras hakasa. The Torah says. It's not tuma. That's correct. It is not tuma. Thank you. Okay. Tapet sadi heyavet aleph. Let's go. Klei cheres sheyatza. We then said with the klei cheres, you're supposed to puncture it. So the Gemara asks the same question we asked by tearing the beged. Kli amarachman evela kliu. Evelo kliu. It's not called a kli anymore. So once you punctured it, it's no good. So the answer, shenika v'shorash katan. You remember, if anyone has done the Mishnayos in Kalim, you know that if you take a kli and you puncture it such that it can no longer serve its initial use, it now becomes tahor, even if you could use it as a receptacle for something else. So the answer is here, you make a hole in it sufficient to have a small root go through it, and that already is enough to remove its tumah. Rashi... the Rashi here is on the next piece. He talks about what's missing from the Sfarim. He puts it back in, and therefore our Gemara has it. But Rashi then, after that, gives you another answer. If you see the Rashi of Umishani Deratzef Lemaratzef, he has a piece in there which is really relevant for us. If you go down in that Rashi, three lines, he says, Vigabe Klicheres, that's on the fourth thin line in Rashi. Vigabe Klicheres, Ikola Memar, Denikvo Demasnisin, Bemotzi Mashke Litaher. He says, he really means Bekones Mashke, he doesn't mean Bemotzi Mashke. That's in Machlokas and the Mishnayos and Kalim. But what Rashi is saying over there is, you could have, instead of giving the root as a standard, you could have said, if you make a hole in it sufficient that if you put the Kli in water, water would enter. That's what you call kone smashke.
Rashi is basically saying that there, if you're fixing it, don't you have to fix it?
The first part of the Rashi is not about this. The first part of the Rashi is on Deratzif Limaratzif, which is the next one. We're not on fixing it yet. We'll get to fixing it.
That's what Rashi asked, like the third. Why do you have to fix this? He says it's such a small only for a mashke.
Mati. The first part of it is on the Kli Nechoshes. We're not fixing the Kli Cheres. We don't fix the klicheres.
That's what Rashi. Okay. Yeah. Rashi's asking, yeah, why don't you fix it? Rashi answers. We'll see it tomorrow.
Thank you. Again, Rashi says by the klicheres that when we talk about piercing it, it's talking about piercing it such that water will enter, and yet it retains the title of kli, and therefore, as Madi is, I think is what Madi is trying to point out, and therefore I don't need to discuss what we're going to discuss next, we haven't gotten to yet, regarding the metal kli. There's no issue of it losing its status as a kli. It's still called a kli for other purposes, for holding larger items. Correct. Okay. Kli nechav. We then get to the metal kli where we say pochso that you're supposed to make, as Rashi said before, a nekev godol, a large hole. So the Gemara asks in our edition v'halav klihu, it's no longer a kli. They note in the margin kli amarachmana v'halav klihu is an alternate edition for this. So his answer is deratzif meratzif. The answer is you are going to make it ratzuf. Ratzuf means two things that are flushed together. When you pave a surface, it's called ratzuf. And the idea here is, as Rashi notes, you hammer it together, and that way you rejoin it, and it now has its status as a kli all over again, which is a huge problem, what he just told me. He told me that I'm gonna make a hole in it for it to lose its tuma, and then I'm gonna rehammer it. But again, if you've learned Mishnah Aleph and Kalim, you know you can't do that, because in Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Aleph and Kalim, it tells us that a metal kli that has a hole punched in it and then is sealed up regains its tuma. So what are you doing over here? You regain the tuma. How can you bring this into the Beis HaMikdash? So the Dam Zevachim offers me one answer. He says maybe it's Dirabbanan. And therefore, and the idea that a metal kli regains its tumah when you hammer it back together is a derabanan. So like we said before regarding the beged, I'll overlook that as far as fulfilling this deraisa. But he also notes that the Rambam, when he presents us in Hilchos Maaseh HaKorbanos, says that what you do is you reassemble it deratzif meratzif in the Beis HaMikdash. So what you're actually doing is bringing it back into the Beis HaMikdash while it is tahor, and then reassembling it in the Beis HaMikdash, and then it gains its tumah, but that's okay, because now it has the status of something that became tumah in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore you can do your Riko Shtifa, and then take it out. That would be an appropriate process.
How are you allowed to bring it back in?
Why not?
Is there, like Rashi used the word mutter v'hachnis?
Yeah, well,
with mashma that if it's not a shame on it, no reason to bring it into a Makom Kaddish.
You can bring things into the Beis HaMikdash. You can't bring the only thing you can't bring in.
Rashi in the Mishnah when it says Kaira and Rashi Kaira with Torah Betuva says Mutar Lachnisa.
Yeah.
Why Mutar?
Because now it's Tahor. Now it's no longer Tame.
No, but there's no out Mutar Lachnisa.
Yeah, it just means it's no longer Tame. That's all. That's all it's saying there. There's no issue on bringing it.
Why not by the Beged? You can tear it when you had a problem. How big you're ripping it? Why don't you just rip it and then reattach it?
Because the
shame bag again on it.
Yeah.
Because I don't, no. What the Gemara is saying is I don't need to. There's no need to.
The Gemara had a problem with the Gemara asked. We see that you have to pull a shame bag if you don't rip it enough. Rip more and then re-sew it again.
And then re-sew it in the Beis HaMikdash.
Like we're saying here.
In other words, why don't they present that? Because there they have a solution. There they have a solution of tear it part way, and it will lose its status of tumah, but it will keep its status of beged. There's nothing I can do with klei nechoshes.
No, again,
that's not what I'm saying. What we're saying is that regarding the beged, if you tear it part way, it will lose its status of tumah, and it will keep its status as beged.
Not midrabanan.
We don't care about the drabanan.
We should. I'm saying, why can't we care about the drabanan?
Oh, in other words, why don't I go out of my way to satisfy the drabanan and then do the restitching and do the restitching in the Beis HaMikdash? No, it doesn't always have to be a beged. Any more than this always has to be a kli nechoshes. He's right about that. So why don't I suggest doing this? Why don't I suggest tearing it entirely and then resewing it? It's an interesting idea.
Or putting a big enough hole in the necrosis that it becomes a clean chodesh when you repair it.
You can't.
Why?
Because there's no such thing. Klei nechoshes by definition regains its tumah. That's the Mishnah in Kalim.
Does this Kalim also say if you put on your hand line, it becomes a klei chodesh?
I don't believe so. I think with a klei nechoshes, it will always restore its original tumah. It will always gain back its original tumah. And it's an interesting question. Let me think about it. I think I have an answer, but let me hold off. But it's a good question. Why not tear it all the way when you're dealing with the beged? Okay. We know that we'll get back to you with that.
What happens to it when you repair it? You obviously can't use it as a klei kodesh anymore. What do you do with it?
After that, well, that's the thing. I have this obligation of clean the thing out. I don't care what's going to happen to it. Okay. That's my chiyuv.
Does it go in Geniza, or can you use it for another
purpose? You would have to. It would end up going in Geniza. It's an old klei shareis.
So it's not a...
You can't take it home and use it. No. Yeah. Okay, weiter, folks. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish now asks the question that I have in the last box in your table. What do you do with the me'il? You read the parsha on Shabbos. The rule regarding the me'il is safala fiv saviv yelo lo yikareya, that you can't tear. The me'il may not be torn. Not just the safa, but the me'il in general. So here I have a beged that I'm not allowed to tear at all. So Amar Reish Lakish says, me'il shenitma, if the me'il becomes tame, machniso v'pachos mishalosh al shalosh u'mechabso. Don't confuse shalosh al shalosh with shlosh al shlosha. Shlosh al shlosha means 3x3 tefach. Shalosh al shalosh is 3x3 etzba'os. Finger breaths. Yeah, but if you take a look at the Rambam on that, the Rambam writes it's shalosh explicitly, and so does the Mishnah in Kelim Perachav Ches Mishnah Ches. And I don't understand why the Bach does that. Everybody else, and he says the Rashi does, but Rashi doesn't. Rashi has shalosh al shalosh. I don't understand what happened to the Bach. He has the weight of Rashi and the Rambam against him, and the Rashbam. No, not the Rashbam. Just the Rashi and the Rambam and the Mishnah in Kelim. So Reish Lakish says what you do is you bring it in units that are 3x3, less than, I should say, 3x3 etzba'os, umechabso, and you launder it little by little as you bring it in. And that way you've solved your tumah, because in such small segments it isn't really a beged, it's such that it could receive tumah, but on the other, it's called a beged because it's still part of a beged. Mishum shenemar lo yikareya, because the pasuk says it shall not be torn. So Moshe Rav Abba Bar Ava asks, but wait a minute, we've learned that the shear of shalosh al shalosh is irrelevant regarding the following: ha'avin v'harakim, fabrics, materials that are either very thick. Very thick material, or a very soft material, are not subject to shalosh al shalosh rules. Rashi explains why at the bottom of the thin lines. Delabla levisha chazu, they're not suitable for wearing. Velabla taki ben chaluk, and you couldn't make a tunic out of them. Elaleshevalav, their only use really is to sit on them. Vitzarach shlosha al shlosha, and therefore for them to be tamei, you require 3x3 tefach, not 3x3 etzbos. So in other words, we should have said, bring it in shiurim of less than 3x3 tefach, which is much bigger, obviously, depending on how you measure, it's about 10 inches, as opposed to 3x3 esbos, which is about 3 inches, 2.7. Umeil avhu, and the meil we know is very thick. Kedekaimalam beseder yuma, as the Gemara Yuma says, chutan kafel shnemasar, each thread is spun out of 12 subthreads. Vafilu shalosh al shalosh yachnis, and therefore the point is you should be able to bring in 3 etzbos by 3 etzbos, and indeed anything up to 3x3 tefach. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this is different because it's still attached to the rest of the meil. Agav avihan chashivi, when it's there with its source, then it's more important, as Rashi says, Kishu mechuber v'beged, when it's attached to the beged, chashuv gimel al gimel didei. It's 3x3, even 3x3 etzba, are considered to be significant, and therefore you can't bring it in that way. So the Gemara now asks a general question about how I'm doing this kibbutz. Tosfos notes it must be talking about big day kahuna. We'll see why in a moment. V'haboy shivas samimanim. But wait a minute. Kibbutz requires that you take 7 special ingredients that are discussed elsewhere in the Gemara. That are used in order to clean things out. You have to pass the 7 ingredients over this stain, and one of them can't come into the azara. Damar of Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua. Rabbi Nachman says, citing Rabba Baravua, dam chatas umaras nigam tzrichin shivas samamanim. When you remove dam chatas, or when you test maros nigoim, when you wash maros nigoim out as part of a garment's cleansing, you require passing the 7 samamanim on the Tanya, the Braisa says, Ela she'ein machnisin meraglayim lemikdash. You can't pass meraglayim into the base hamikdash. Meraglayim, by the way, if you take a look in Krisis Davav, that's where it says that you can't bring meraglayim into the base hamikdash. So Rashi there gives you the standard approach. Meraglayim, it means urine. That's what it means. However, the Shita Mekubetzes there quotes a Tosfos that says that maybe it's an asev, it's a grass that was called meraglayim. And just because the name of it is not a nice name, we're not bringing it into the Beis HaMikdash. But either way, you're not allowed to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and it's one of the 7 ingredients. V'chi tema tapet zadehem v'beis, v'chi tema demivlo lehu ba'adei shiva samamanim umavar lehu lekulu kichad. And if you'll say, well, that's okay, because it's mixed in with the other 7 samamanim, and you bring them all in together, and that doesn't bother us, but that won't work for laundering. V'atna, and the Mishnah says, he'eviron shalo kisidron, o shehevir shivatan ke'echav lo asa v'lo klum. Regarding using this to launder, in terms of testing dam to see whether it's dam nida, or whether it's tseva, things like that, we say that if you use the 7 out of the established order for using them, or if you do all 7 at once, lo asa v'lo kum. You can't do laundry that way. You have a prescribed order for doing this. So the so, and even if you'll say, well, I just mix it in with one of the 7, we learned that with each ingredient that you use to wash it out, you have to rub the material 3 times. This is like stain remover. So how do you do this? Rather, what you do is you mix it with bland saliva. There's a discussion of what bland saliva means. Did he eat before it? Did he not eat before? And how long before it did he not eat? And the Amar Reish Lakish, as Reish Lakish says, Rok Tefel Tzarech Shem Kol Echad V'Echad. Each one is mixed in with Rok Tefel, and this bland saliva is sufficient to remove its status as Mei Raglayim. So Tosfos says this must be talking about Big Day Kahuna, because otherwise we do have another option. We could use what they call Tzafon. Tzafon is what's called in modern Hebrew Sabon. There's a soap mineral that you're actually able to use. That's the equivalent of the Shevas Amamanim. But he says the reason you can't do that here is because it would remove the colors from the Big Day Kahuna. That's what Tzafon does. It removes Tzeva. So that's why you're not able to use it with Big Day Kahuna, which goes back to why this question is asked here, and why it wasn't asked on the Mishnah. The Mishnah was talking about any sort of beged. But now we mention the Me'il, that's Big Day Kahuna. So that's why this question shows up here instead of showing up directly after the Mishnah. That bothered me when I read that, but Tosus answers the question. Okay. Good. That all is just follow-up on our fundamental question of, is kibbutz, shvira, mrika, shtifa, is that an obligation, or is it something that I can do? By saying that, you must bring it into the Beis HaMikdash, by hook or by crook, Tuma Derabanan gets overlooked, and all of that, we have now taught that it's actually an obligation of, you must get rid of the dam, or you must get rid of the absorption of the chatas. We now have a new Mishnah regarding this issue of mrika and shtifa. Echad shebishal bo, ve'echad she'iru l'socha roteach, whether you cook the chatas in the kli, this metal kli, or you simply pour in hot liquid from the kli. Echad kachem kachem ve'echad kachem kalam, low level karbanos, high level karbanos, teudin mriko shtifa. You must do mriko u shtifa. That's the rule. Rabbi Shimon disagrees regarding kachem kalam. Rabbi Shimon omer kachem kalam ain't teudin mriko shtifa. Rabbi Shimon says kachem kalam do not require mriko shtifa. Take a look at Rashi on the kachem kalam. Important Rashi. The Rabbi Shimon Omer Kachim Kalam v'cholu b'gemar mefarish taima. The Gemara will explain why there's a disagreement regarding Kachim Kalam. But Rashi says v'im tomar. You might ask, hare habalua nase nosar. Whatever you've absorbed of the Kachim Kalam in the kli is now leftovers after the time frame is over. Right, your shlamim becomes nosar. Upolto beheter lacharzman. And after a while, you're going to use that kli to cook another shlamim, and at that point, you're going to extrude nosar into your new shlamim. So how in the world could Rabbi Shimon say it doesn't require mriko shtifa? You have to kasher it. So he says, no. Modi Rabbi Shimon deboy hagala barotchen. Rabbi Shimon agrees you require hagala. Everything, every kli that you use to cook a karbon requires kashering. Umitaras mriko shtifa hu demamitlei. It's only mriko shtifa, which is washing it out in cold water. That's what he says you don't need here. That's a ritual, and it's not relevant there. It's not a kashering ritual. Kedemetartzinim b'gemara gabe truma, like the Gemara is going to say regarding truma. Lo nitzrucha l'kada omar mar b'mayim v'lo b'yayin b'mayim v'lo b'mazug hafilu b'yayin v'afilu b'mazug. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Ostensibly, you would require kashering of Akum Kaddish because you can't take the Nosar outside the Beis HaMikdash. So you're still required in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah is teaching me here about a process that is not a kashering process at all, and saying it's required whether the cooking went on in the kli or whether it was just Eroi that went on in the kli. So Tosus has a great discussion over here, which I would love to go through, but we're not going to because this is Daf. But the Rabbeinu Tam says, aha! That means we treat Eroi Kli Rishon like Kli Rishon. That's a huge discussion regarding Hilchos Shabbos, regarding Kashrus, right? This happens all the time, right? You have a cholent, and you take your cholent and you pour it into something else, and there's food into something else. Whatever food is in there is getting hit with what we call Eroi Kli Rishon, something poured from a Kli Rishon. Is that cooking it as though it was in a kli rishon or not? So Tosfos says, you see from here, from the fact that you have to clean out your kli, even when it was subject to just Eroi, that teaches me that it's like a kli rishon. And therefore, regarding Shabbos, if I want to pour my cholent into something, I better make sure that's fully cleaned out. It's not even Eroi, it's not even a step down. That's a bona fide kli rishon. It has ramifications for kashering also. Satosus raises that point. He then adds a challenge to it from the Gemara. It's a great discussion related to Tom versus Rashbam, but it's not going to be for right now.
Does Mrika and Shtifa include
Hagala? Does not by definition, but Hagala is required. That's the lesson of that Rashi. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara says, okay, I have a brisa, and this is going to be how I know that Eroi is the equivalent of Kli Rishon, at least for our purposes. Tanu Rabbanan, brisa says, the Torah says, I brought this pasuk the other day on the sheet, Uchlicheres asher tevushabo yishaver. I brought it here also a little bit. If you have this clay vessel, in which it was cooked, yishaver, it shall be broken. So, eili ela shebishelbo, that's only if it was actually cooked there. Iro lesocha roteach minai, and how do I know it applies, even if you just poured the hot liquid in, or the hot food in? Tamal lomar, that vav doesn't belong, asher tevushala bo yishaver, that which is cooked in it. Yishaver. So Rashi says, Midesamech Yishaver Eitzel Bo. It's the fact that you have the word Bo right before Yishaver. Velokasav im Bechli Cheres Tibushal Yishaver. It could have used the shorter form. If it is cooked in a Kli Cheres, it shall be, the vessel shall be broken. Im Bechli Cheres Tibushal Yishaver. So the word Bo is extra. Lemedrish to teach, im Nivla Bo Mikomokom Yishaver, that if anything is absorbed in it, the Kli shall be broken. That's how I know, Eroi.
Eroi is not really Bishul, according to this.
According to this, it's really not Bishul, otherwise I wouldn't have required Xeris HaKasav. Correct.
Separate thing.
Ostensibly true. Boy, Rabbi Bar Chama, I say ostensibly because of the next piece. Boy, Rabbi Bar Chama, Rabbi Bar Chama asks a question. Tlo Bavir Tanur Mahu, what do you really care about here? Do you care about Bishul, or do you care about Belia? That's what he wants to know. And he said, and he suggests a case which divides between the two. He says, let's say you suspended the spit that the carbon is roasting on in the tanur, in the oven. Mahu, what's the rule? Because what the question is, well, I need to break, well, I'm not saying whether it's earthenware or not yet, because that's the Gemara's question. The question is, does the oven have to be broken? We're assuming it's earthenware, because we're saying breaking it as opposed to mrika and shtifa. Does the oven have to be smashed afterwards or not? On the one hand, Abishul Ubiluo Udekabed Rahmana, do I say that our concern is, the Torah's concern is, both that it's cooked in it and absorbed in it, and this oven doesn't absorb anything. The assumption is that it's not absorbing anything in the actual oven. The Odilma Abishul Below Bilua, or do I say no? Even any cooking that goes on in it without absorption, so something was cooked inside it. That's my question. Not necessarily, because it does in terms of the idea of Belia. We're saying there is no Belia that's going on from this thing that was cooked in the airspace. So in that sense, it does. But beyond that, not, because this is Xeris HaKasav territory. So it's really not something that you can extrapolate from Korbanos to something else. But it does in terms of saying something in the airspace doesn't have Belia. That's true. It'll depend on the size of the oven. You can go into all sorts of chilukim. So Omar Rava. Rava says, I'm going to try to prove the point. We're going to bring two proofs. Here's our first. Tashma, comment here. We said, look what our language was, Echad Shebishel Bo, the Echad She'iru L'Socha Roteach. Whether you cook in it or whether you spill something into it, you pour something into it, you're going to need to do this. But the point is that when you spill something in, we're assuming there's no Bishul, there's only Belia. So Belia is what matters, Bishul does not matter, and therefore cooking in the airspace is irrelevant. Bilua below Bishul lo kemi bayolan, to which the Gemara answers, no, that doesn't help us at all. You're discussing Belia without Bishul. That wasn't our question. Ki kemi bayolan, Bishul below Bilua. What we wanted to know is, what if you're cooking without Belia? You've satisfied me that Belia without Bishul works, but I wanted to know about Bishul without Belia. Mai, so what's the rule? Tashma, come in here, da amar of Nachman, amar Rabba Baravua, tanur shal mikdash shal mateches haya. Aha! He says they made the tanur in the Beis HaMikdash out of metal, and the assumption is, as Rashi says, on purpose. We specifically used metal. Rashi says, kesal kedaitach, our assumption is, mipnei shetzolin bo shvudei chatas, because you're going to use this, these spits in it to cook the chatas, shalu itan shvira. You don't want to have to keep breaking the tanur in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, what you're going to do is make it out of metal, and therefore, you won't require that, because you can just do your mrika and shtifa and be done with it. So he says, v'isak adaitach bishul ubi lua, the Bach has it. If you're going to tell me the requirement is bishul plus bilua, right, ne'avet shacharis, then make it out of pottery, and there is no blia. So can I prove from here that even bishul alone is sufficient to warrant it? To which he says, not necessarily. Kevan de'ika shiare menachos daf yasin batanur ve'ika bishul ubilua avdinan shamatachas. He says, you're too chatas focused. Granted, this parak is called dam chatas, but there are other karbanas that are being cooked in this oven and even being baked. You take your mincha and you bake it there in that oven, right? And when you bake the mincha in the oven, we know the way they baked bread. They slapped it onto the side of the oven in order to do so. It's not like the lechem apanim, which is in some kind of a mold. So therefore, it's actually touching the walls, and therefore you have belia, and that's why they did it. What is the belia? Rashi says shemen hamincha. It's not the mincha itself that we're worried about. It's the oil. Rashi says from the mincha that we're worried about. So therefore, That's why they made it out of metal. So you can't prove anything from there regarding the question of bilua without of bishul without bilua. You cannot prove anything for bishul without bilua, and we leave it as sarachiyun. Yes.
Bilua is a temporary thing with pontefis, or is a permanent thing with
cheres? Well, no, it has to be removed in either case. But by cheres, you can't remove it in the standard ways. Although they're going to discuss that. They're going to discuss that in the next piece. In the bottom of the page, heading up onto the top of the next page, we'll see a way to remove it from cheres. Hang in there. Just wait. Hahu tanura da'atchu beitichaya. This is a classic, having nothing to do with karbanos. This is a classic in kashrus. Hahu tanura da'atchu batichya. You have an oven, and one of the things that they did with the ovens was that they would smear them with fat. Okay, Rashi says the elia, the tail fat. They would smear the oven with it, and you would then want to bake bread in this oven, and you are now creating fleshic bread. So he says, "Ha'utanora da'atchu batichaya." You smeared the oven with fat. Asra Rabba Bar Ahiloi lemechla lerifta la'olam. Rabba Bar Ahiloi, he says that bread is treif. Not that the fat was treif; the fat was kosher. You're not allowed to eat that bread. Ever doesn't mean that bread never becomes kosher. The bread we know never becomes kosher. His point is, no matter what you do with the oven afterwards, even if you kosher the oven, there is no way that you will be allowed ever to eat bread baked in that oven. Va'afilu b'milcha. He says, even if you're eating it with something that was salted, meaning something parav, doesn't make a difference. Dilma asila mechla b'kutcha, because we're concerned you might eat it with a dairy product, right? Kutcha, remember, was the yogurt with the crunchies? Right? The milk that went bad and they used to mix in little pieces of bread in it. So because you might eat your fleshic bread with milchiks, therefore we say you can't eat your fleshic bread with anything.
Why did you put OUD on it or something?
You did it, right.
OUM.
Yeah.
Well, why would they smear it with this?
Right, so apparently this was some sort of a means of either sealing the oven, like sealing gaps in the oven to retain the heat better, or it was some kind of a thing for taste when you had meat that you were cooking in it or something. But yeah, you just created the original fleshic oven by doing this. Oh, that's an interesting idea. Maybe it's like a grease because you make your bread specifically.
Right.
Right. So that's maybe that's it. Maybe it's to make it non. It's a non-stick oven. Unfortunately, it's no longer a bread oven. Right. So they ran out of vegetable. Oh, you know what it was? No, it was Pesach. It was Pesach, and they were told they can't use the peanut oil, and they can't use this oil, they can't use that oil. So they're smearing it with the meat. So the Gemara says,
what if it had been the other way around? What if you put butter in the?
Ah, so here we go. Just wait. The answer is no good. But just look at the Gemara. Meisvei. The Gemara asks, but wait a minute. We learned the discussion regarding dairy bread, and there we do entertain kashering. Meisvei ein lashon as aisa bechalav. We say you're not allowed to knead dough with milk. Vim lush, and if you do, kolapas kula asurim nehergal avera. If you do, the bread is asur, it's dairy bread, and that's something that might cause a person to sin if you were to eat it with meat. Kayotze bo, and similarly, that same source says, ein tashnes atnur be'elia, you don't smear your oven with the fat. Vim tash, and if you do, kolapas kula asur, the whole, any bread you make it is going to be asur, ad sheyasek as atnur, until you light the oven. So kashering is a possibility. Tiyufta to Rabba Bar Eloi. That knocks out Rabba Bar Eloi. To which he answers, yeah, Tiyufta, you're right, 100%. That's true. The oven, in fact, may be kashered afterwards. Tosfos has a great discussion here, because we have three different cases in the Gemara that are raised. We have the case of Dagin Sha'alu Beka'ara, right, in Chulin. If I have fish that go into a fleshic plate, what am I allowed to eat them with? And then we have a discussion also about a radish that you cut with a fleshic knife. It's too long a discussion for us to go into now, because we're going to have minions soon.
Bread after the fact is okay.
No. The bread after the fact for sure is not okay. The only question is whether the oven can be kosher such that you'll be able to use it eventually. No, and Rabbi Bar-Loi says la'olam. He's not talking about the bread. He's talking about the oven. Correct. He's talking about the oven, not the bread. Yeah. That's the whole point here.
Well, we think that the oven can't be
kosher.
Look at Rashi.
That's exactly what he's saying. Yeah, I use the Rashi. But he said afilu isiku. The point is that you can never kosher the oven. Why not? I'll now answer for you based on Tosfos. Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam suggests that it's because you can't clean ovens well. You can't clean the oven out properly, and that's the concern. I used to tell people before Pesach that for microwaves, they're better off just getting a new microwave for Pesach, because microwaves are impossible to really clean well. you destroy yourself trying to clean a microwave properly. That's not a psak, and that has nothing to do with anything to go on in the shul. You better believe it. But there are certain things that are just really, really hard to clean well.
Yes.
No, it's not really Pesach. Yes, Pesach is coming. Don't worry. So let's go. So the Gemara says, you've now told me I'm able to kosher the oven. I have two challenges to the idea of koshering. First challenge. The Gemara asks, Amar le Ravina le Rabashi. Ravina asks Rabashi, V'chmeachar di'itosa Rabba Bar Eloi. If Rabba Bar Eloi was rejected, Amai Amar Rav k'derosa Pesach yishavru. Why does Rav say that you have to break all your clay pots before Pesach? So Amar le Rav Moki lahi b'shal mataches. The answer is because Rav said the oven that's kosherable is a metal oven, not a clay oven. And Yaakov, that's why I wanted to hold off on what material the oven is. V'ibayis ema. Alternatively, I'll answer you. Ema, I will say, betanur shel cheres, it's talking about a clay oven. Zeh seko mi bifnim, v'zeh seko mi bachutz. The oven may be kosherable because you light it on the inside, and therefore the surfaces are directly exposed to the heat. As opposed to the kederos, these pots, you're going to fire from the outside. Right, you expose them to heat from the outside, and they don't get heated properly. So he says, v'naved asaka mi bifnim, why don't you light a fire inside these kelim? And so he says, Chayis alayu de misbury. People will be afraid that they're going to break, and they won't expose them to the heat properly. That's always the classic problem when people want to blowtorch an oven. The concern is that they're afraid they're going to break the oven, and therefore they don't expose to the heat sufficiently.
Or they might burn themselves.
Or if they do it well, they're going to destroy their oven, in fact. But he says, aside from that, Helkach, therefore, Haikuvia, or Buvia, depending on your edition, but if I have hollowed out Kalim, that's what we're talking about. Rashi gives you the whole explanation, Ravim Chalulim. They're like hollowed out coals. Kamin spisas kedera that you can put a pot onto. Upamim shetachan osan shaman veofin bo lechem. The akari tichya. So sometimes they would actually bake bread inside it. So haikuvia heseko mi bachutzu. Those get heated from the outside. The fire is not inside them. Va'asir. And therefore you aren't going to be able to kasher it. So he asks, Tapatzadi vavam adalev. My second challenge. My first challenge was, why is it that the pots are not kasherable for Pesach? And we answered that question. And the second one goes back to your question. Ella Kedera Shamikdash Ama Yishavru. Why are you breaking the pots in the Beis Hamikdash? Nehadrin Olikiv Shonos. Put the clay vessels back into the kiln. That should be an option. I should be able to put it back into the kiln, and they'll undergo libun, and that should work for pottery. That's his question. Rashi gives you a longer version of that question. So I'm Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, because you don't remember what we learned. Lefishay nosin kivshonas b'Yerushalayim, by public decree, public contract, you were not allowed to make kilns in Yerushalayim. Quoting from Bava Kama, Rashi says, Mishum Kutra, because of the smoke that they would generate, you weren't allowed to have kilns in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore koshering there was not an option. You can't take them outside of the. You can't take them out of the Beis Hamikdash, much less Yerushalayim, and we'll, or maybe you could by Kashim Kalim. You could leave the Mikdash, but not Yerushalayim. We'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.